On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Assembly wrapped up the spring session Thursday with Speaker Robin Voss saying it'll likely be the last floor session for the year. A bit of a roadmap as we talk with Democratic Representative Tip McGuire of Kenosha. We discuss the slate of election and voting bills sent to the governor's desk. Get reaction on his chamber approving funds to replace the state juvenile correctional facility, Lincoln Hills. How do you feel about building a replacement facility in Milwaukee County? What election bills do you want the governor to sign or veto? How would you characterize the work of lawmakers on both sides of the aisle in this session? 800-642-1234. Representative Tip McGuire, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me, and good morning.
Good morning. So the House has concluded its work for the year. Speaker Voss saying Thursday was likely the last session day. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm hopeful that my colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle haven't concluded their session, since Governor Tony Evers has requested a special session to pass some of the relief that he's identified that we need as a state. As you recall from his State of the State, there is some tax relief and other programs, child care, and other things that he believes the state needs to address. And so I think that's certainly something that we should be coming back in a session to at least discuss and see whether those opportunities are something that we can pass.
What are the odds that a special session will come to pass?
I think pretty low. I think, as we've seen repeatedly from legislative Republicans, they'll refuse to take up the governor's special session. He's done this a number of times with issues that are important to the citizens of Wisconsin, and Republicans continue to just not move on them and gavel out.
Let's move on to Lincoln Hills. Your chamber unanimously passing a plan to replace Lincoln Hills at like the 11th hour. The assembly version goes back to the Senate before it goes to the governor in Joint Finance Committee for a full approval. How do you feel about the end product, this $42 million plan?
I think this is good. So I know it's been a long time coming for something like this, but it certainly is you know, something where there's been a lot of compromise and a lot of back and forth on the bill. I know, you know, Governor Evers has certainly been a leader on this issue for a long time. He was, I believe, originally on the commission looking into, or the task force looking into, Lincoln Hills. And he also had tried to address this issue with funding in his original budget that was at the time removed by legislative Republicans. But I'm glad to see that this issue is finally, you know, that everybody can come to the table and agree on a final product. And I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to help a lot of these juveniles, as well as their families, remain engaged and allow them to then hopefully proceed without recidivating or committing additional crimes.
I want to just probe a little bit further here, because notable that your two colleagues, Democrat Evan Goyke of Milwaukee and Republican Michael Shraw of Oshkosh, they worked across the aisle to create the original bill. Did you think that groundwork had an impact on getting this across the finish line?
Absolutely, 100%. I think that both Representative Shraw and Representative Goyke did incredible work on this bill. And I think, it should be this should be an example of how we can work together and how we can take the things that we're mutually concerned about, regardless of what your political perspective is, and use that as the basis of finding some compromise. I think this would be a better example of how we'd like to see the Capitol operate than, frankly, what we've been seeing since Scott Walker lost, and we saw, you know, obviously the removal of authority from the governor before he was even able to enter into office, and the refusal to take up his special sessions when he's called them, and the continual refusal to include some of these provisions in his state budgets. I think this instead, the Lincoln Hills is a better example of how we should be working together.
One more question here before we move on from Lincoln Hills. How do you feel about using Lincoln Hills and Irma as an adult prison?
I guess I haven't thought deeply about that. I'm not sure. You know, one of the things I do know is that I believe our prison population has been shrinking during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so I'm not certain that having a new adult space is necessary. But that's certainly something, you know, again, that I haven't looked at into too deeply. So it may be possible that it's necessary. But to my knowledge, it doesn't seem like that would be the first step I would take.
Talking with Tip McGuire, Democratic State Representative for Kenosha's 64th District. You can join in. What questions do you have for a state lawmaker from Kenosha? Does the increased partisanship in the Capitol concern you? Has it limited the debate on issues that are important to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's look at firearms liability. This bill that recently passed your chamber would prevent victims of gun violence from suing gun manufacturers, and supporters say it protects the industry from politically motivated lawsuits, calling it lawfare attacking the firearms industry. Do you see it that way?
No, I don't. I think, you know, when we look at some of the harms that have occurred for communities, you know, and the way that the gun manufacturers have been able to sort of push, a legal system that permits at times dangerous people to access firearms, I don't view it that way. And I note that this happened, about a week or just a few days after, you know, families received about $70 million in money from the Sandy Hook issue, from the settlement in that case. And I think that shows that there was some liability, obviously, from the gun manufacturers and others. And ultimately, it helped. I don't want to say make the victims whole, but the family of the victims, it helped them move on, and it helped hold those liable responsible.
It came a week after families of the victims killed in the Sandy Hook massacre had settled a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against Remington, the gun manufacturer. I want to look at your legislation trying to close a gun loophole that is related to the Kyle Rittenhouse case. The bill aims to clarify a state statute regarding the possession of a dangerous weapon by a person under 18. What problem does this bill solve?
Well, so, you know, currently there are restrictions on individuals under 18 and ultimately minors. From the state's perspective, from being able to possess certain firearms, but I don't want to quite call it a loophole, but sort of the exemption here was for long rifles, and that was for the purposes of hunting. And so we've clarified the law to say, certainly we don't want to inhibit on anybody's hunting ability, but we also don't want 15, 16, 17-year-olds, you know, wandering through our streets and our neighborhoods and nearby our schools with long rifles. Because, you know, functionally, that has the same impact as it would if they were using a handgun in the same circumstance, right? Like, we have a law that says we don't really want children walking around with handguns, you know, on our streets. And so why would we allow this exception for a long gun outside the context of hunting? So it certainly still permits hunting and upholds Wisconsin's long-term traditions of being able to enjoy our natural resources and our hunting community and our outdoor heritage, but it doesn't it no longer allows that exemption for long rifles in the city.
Let's bring on a call now. Jeremy is joining us from Racine. Jeremy, hi. You want to bring up the firearms liability?
My question is, where does it end? If we start suing or holding manufacturers liable for the usage of their products, even though we can debate the fundamentals of whether or not we need such a product in society, then where does it end with people who produce survival knives for people who go to the woods and use certain types of knives, but use them for not what their intended purpose is? Vehicles who are used to that hit people. Just recently in Waukesha, a gentleman drove through a parade. Are we going to hold the manufacturer of the vehicle liable for the what the perpetrator used their product for? It's a very slippery slope if we start holding manufacturers liable for people's own actions.
Representative McGuire, go ahead.
Yeah, so first of all, Jeremy, thank you, and I appreciate your thoughts on this. I guess the first thing I'll say is it isn't a new concept of liability that we're addressing. What the Republican legislators were attempting to do was create ultimately sort of an immunity from liability for certain manufacturers. Right now, every manufacturer, every I guess operator of sort of anything in the world has the possibility for liability under, you know, negligence standards or other standards. The question is whether the facts line up and say, yes, you were at least partially responsible, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that what we're talking about is creating something new. We're allowing the existing legal system, which has sort of potential liability for virtually anybody who's operating in the world, to continue to exist rather than removing gun manufacturers from the same system that you and I operate in or that motor vehicle manufacturers operate in. So motor vehicle manufacturers wouldn't necessarily be liable for this man's actions in Waukesha. I don't think that that would make sense. But certainly if there's a failure on a vehicle that causes an accident, right, they would be liable. Now, under you know this Republican proposal, we would be presenting an immunity from liability for potential liability that they may have. And I fundamentally disagree with that. I think that we should be allowing our courts and our juries and individuals to be able to determine who is liable and ultimately who is responsible or at least negligent in certain actions.
Let's let's just pause there with Democratic Representative Tip McGuire of Kenosha discussing legislation he's worked to advance this session. Do you think the election and voting bills passed by Republicans will further election integrity or suppress the vote? One amendment the assembly passed would prohibit the use of private grants or donations to help run elections in the state. How do you feel about that? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with Representative Tip McGuire here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Democratic Representative Tip McGuire as we discuss the latest action out of the Assembly, taking stock of the session as last Thursday was likely the last day of the session this year. What legislation did you want action on this session that made it through or was sidelined? 800-642-1234. Representative Tip McGuire of Kenosha with us for about nine more minutes. Let's turn to these election and voting bills. Republicans, they put together a website on their election and voting bills that says we're moving a strong package of election integrity bills designed to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. How would you characterize these bills?
I would say I disagree with their characterization of how this package of legislation looks. First of all, there are a number of pieces of these bills that ultimately make it harder for people to stay as registered voters. But the points that I think are most important are there are parts of these bills that I think lend themselves to corruption long term, and I'm going to identify them. So the first one is that they now allow these bills will or one of these bills will basically say that the rules and guidance or the guidance provided by the Wisconsin Elections Commission has to ultimately be approved of by the Joint Committee of Review of Administrative Rules. Now, that is a committee that is majority Republicans. So under this package, the WEC could issue guidance on anything, something very simple, something very complex. Either way, the JCRAR committee, led by Republicans, majority Republican committee, could say, we don't think that that is that qualifies as guidance. We think that that should be an administrative rule. So we want you to claw that back, reissue it as an administrative rule. And then when the Wisconsin Elections Commission reissues it as an administrative rule, the JCRAR committee, majority Republicans, can indefinitely object. They can block a rule from occurring in our state elections if they want under these bills. In addition, the Joint Committee on Finance, which has 12 Republicans on it versus 4 Democrats, can ultimately block various federal funds or other funding programs that would be assisting in the administration of our elections. I think what these bills ultimately do is they give Republicans more control over our elections, not that they give the people more control over our elections. This is not about integrity. This is about a single power, single political party exercising as much control over the electoral system as they can.
Do you think?
And I define that as corruption. That's what that is.
Do you think these bills remedy issues that were raised in the nonpartisan state audit of the 2020 election?
Well, I think the larger question about what this does, because I think there are ways that you can remedy issues while simultaneously doing things that aren't great. I mean, for example, one of these bills ultimately requires, I found this interesting, it requires that there be a Republican lawyer and a Democratic lawyer at the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which is such an absurd concept. It's hard to imagine having to argue against why we shouldn't have lawyers who base their identity on their partisanship advising our Elections Commission. And they're appointed by legislative leadership. So you have a lawyer at the Elections Commission advising the Elections Commission who gets his job from Republicans. And then on the flip side, you'd have the same thing for at the Elections Commission for a Democrat. That doesn't sound like we're getting good nonpartisan analysis. That doesn't sound like we're getting people who are respecting the law. That sounds like what they're trying to do is insert more partisanship into the Elections Commission, which I think is a recipe for disaster.
Talking with Tip McGuire, Democratic State Representative for Kenosha's 64th District. Let's go to Patrick in Viroqua. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Well, good morning and another great show. Thank you. This is usually I try to do a question, but today we moved to Viroqua recently from out of town and went in to vote in the primary a couple weeks ago. And it is unbelievably difficult to get registered to vote. Your state driver's license is not enough ID to get you to vote. And I was lucky I had a checking account that had been changed over to the new address. But anyway, if the Republicans' strategy is to suppress the vote and make it harder to register and vote, they are doing a great job. I can't imagine people – I'm in a pretty good situation. For people that are poverty and don't have a driver's license, they're not going to get to vote.
Patrick, thank you for sharing your story. Wondering here, Representative McGuire, should lawmakers like yourselves have a greater say in the guidance of how elections are carried out in our state? Should you be able to give more guidance to the Wisconsin Elections Commission?
Well, no. I mean, I think the purpose of having independent elections commissions is so that people like me look. I don't apologize for this. I'm an elected official and one who's elected, you know, as a partisan. I run as a Democrat in every election cycle. And so having my perspective on it, I feel would be on how our elections are administered. I feel would and other people's, not just mine, but would be, you know, unduly influencing it. That's not how our elections are supposed to work. It's not supposed to be gamed for the outcomes of politicians. It's supposed to be so that people can have their voice heard and that people can determine what their leadership should look like for their state. And so allowing, you know, Republicans to be able to determine on Republican-controlled committees what the rules are for the state of Wisconsin is absurd. But it would be just as absurd if it was Democrat-controlled committees, right? I mean, there should not be one political party that determines the rules and guidance for how our elections work. In fact, as I said earlier, I think it's absurd that you would even be trying to force any partisan positions, whether they're equally one Democratic lawyer and one Republican lawyer, because then you're just unnecessarily forcing partisanship into the equation.
One more topic I want to bring up before we close. The Assembly approved a proposed constitutional amendment to change the control of federal funds in Wisconsin. And Majority Leader Jim Steinke said it's unconscionable not to have the legislature involved with how pandemic relief funds are spent. Why do you think lawmakers should have a say in directing the flow of these billions of dollars, of federal dollars, flowing into our state?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I would note is during the COVID-19 pandemic, I forget exactly how many days it was that legislative Republicans refused to bring us back to the legislature to address the issues of Wisconsinites. Was it 7 months? Was it 6.5 months? I don't recall exactly. But during the middle of a pandemic, this legislature refused to meet, refused to come back together and meet. And so if you're wondering how we can have any faith that this legislature would have been able to allocate funds in a responsible manner quickly enough to be able to make sure that people had access to it, I think it's a real struggle to see how that would be possible. I mean, there have been funds that the Joint Finance Committee continues to not release to the public on other issues. I believe we had a tremendous delay in the release of several lawsuit settlements that came back to the state. Releasing those funds took quite a bit of time. There was money that the state had allocated for homelessness that the Joint Finance Committee refused to release for quite some time. And I haven't checked recently. They may still have not released it. And then on top of that, for 6.5 months or for 6 months or for however long that was, they refused to meet in the legislature to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic as it was going on. And I think it's good that Governor Evers was able to get this money out to the small businesses and the working families that need it. I think it's good that Governor Evers was able to help our communities and provide funding to them.
We're out of time. Representative Tip McGuire here on the Ideas Network. On this final Monday of February, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers has said he'd veto any bill that makes it harder to vote. The state legislature sent a raft of voting and election bills to the governor Thursday. The legislation, part of a trend seen around the country to reshape election law after former President Trump lost the 2020 election. So what is on your mind as floor periods come to a close? What bill do you want to ask about? Where do you see lawmakers finding common ground? 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. Sean, welcome back.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Let's take stock of where we're at here. In a midterm election year, is it normal for the legislature to adjourn for the year in February or March?
It in Wisconsin is something that happens a lot. Yeah. So February, March, it used to be, you know, at least in my time here, that they would meet into April. But the early adjournment year in the early adjournment in an election year is a little bit jarring, but it's common in Wisconsin state government where you have this 2-year session. So we're still in the session that started in January of 2021. And that's the way that they operate here.
What about a special session that Governor Evers wants to see happen? Is there any possibility of that?
I think at this point, any of the special sessions that the governor's calling for are for, you know, like for his tax cut, for example, the tax rebate that he wants to do. Republicans have already said that's not going to happen. On other issues, he's called special sessions when, I mean, he's kind of in a position where politically he can't get Republicans to do what he wants. So a special session at this point practically is a way for him to call attention to an issue and say, let it be known, you know, people of Wisconsin, this is where I stand. I'm doing everything I can. I called the special session and, you know, the legislature, just the way that it operates here, is under no obligation to take up his special sessions. And as a rule, they haven't.
Let's look at these election and voting bills that lawmakers passed last week. Includes, you know, allowing election workers to get a one-day head start on canvassing absentee ballots. What of the proposals that you saw here, what stands out about this package?
So the early count, as it's referred to, it's actually they could start early, you know, processing absentee ballots early. I think that's interesting because it wasn't really part of this package that Republicans put together. You know, there are some of these bills that they basically introduced as a block, about 10 of them, where they knew what they wanted to do. They kind of brought it forward as a package, and that's the block of bills that is mostly going to be vetoed. This other bill that they passed toward the end of session on allowing central count locations to start processing their absentee ballots early, that is something that's a little bit more of a mystery in terms of would the governor sign it or not. It did not get a bipartisan vote in the legislature because it was attached to other stuff like new deadlines for clerks, for example. In fact, there are different versions that passed the Senate and the Assembly, but we talked a lot and we have talked a lot about, you know, Milwaukee's election results in 2020 came out at like 3 in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
they said that was going to happen because they had a record number of absentee ballots that were cast. And so that should have been a surprise to no one who had been following it. But, you know, if in former President Donald Trump's case, he has used that to falsely claim that there was, you know, something amiss in Wisconsin's elections. So this bill, if you would let a central count location like Milwaukee start to process these ballots early, could potentially lead to an earlier count, which could be good. But because it's attached to other stuff, because it wasn't really something that was in the works until it seemed like the last minute, I'm not sure what the governor's going to do there.
You know, what was interesting to me is that while, you know, Republicans lack the votes needed to overturn a veto by the governor, and it seems there's this growing number of constitutional amendments. Of course, these need to pass Senate and Assembly in two successive sessions before going to voters in a referendum. Do you see more of this type of tactic from Republicans going through this route of trying to get a referendum on a ballot?
It sure seems like it. Yeah. I haven't gone back and, you know, like asked the Legislative Reference Bureau how it's looked over time. But for me, this is a lot. You know, I haven't seen this kind of, I guess, just one after another constitutional amendments being proposed by the legislature. And it's, you know, there's a political angle to for them also. Practically, if they want to sidestep the governor, a constitutional amendment is the way to do it. You have to pass it in two consecutive sessions of the legislature. They know they're going to be under a Republican map, so the chances of the legislature being Republican next year are pretty good. And then it's got to go to voters and be approved by a majority of voters in a statewide election. So it's not an easy process, but it does sidestep the governor's veto. It's also a way for them, if they think they have something that's popular, of putting it on the ballot, potentially to try to drive up turnout on their side.
The election and voting bills, these are drafted after Trump began accusing Republican lawmakers last year of not doing enough to challenge his election loss. Do you feel that that backdrop of Trump and conspiracy theories about the outcome of the election casts these bills in a different light or an unfair light? I mean, are they doomed expressly because of that, of former President Trump?
I don't think you can look at, you know, election bills, proposed changes to election laws, particularly from Republicans, without considering that former President Trump, the leading candidate to be the GOP nomination to have the GOP nomination in 2024, that he is still saying that the election was stolen, that he's still saying, you know, falsely that he won Wisconsin. You can't look at this stuff without pausing and saying, all right, that's a thing and it's not going away. And so when you look at the Republican bills, they're born out of an atmosphere where many of their voters, you know, particularly Republican base voters, are kind of where Donald Trump is. That said, there are some of these bills which are, I'm not sure what the word is on some of this stuff, aggressive in nature or a little more technical in nature, drafted by the Senate chair of the the Senate Selections Committee, Kathy Bernier. She's a former clerk.
Set to retire.
I'm not saying they're making it easier to vote, because I don't think you could look at them and characterize most of them that way. But they're not as like sweeping as others. You know, there's a bill by Senator Dewey Strobel, for example, that puts more hurdles in the absentee voting process. And backers of that plan have said, we want to make it more like in-person voting, but it does make it more complicated to vote absentee than it is now. So there's kind of a range when you look at how lawmakers are responding to these things. But the Trump factor is always there and has to be considered when you look at why Republicans are talking about this so much.
We're talking about a busy week in news from the state legislature with Sean Johnson, Capital Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in on your thoughts on the session on these election and voting bills, 800-642-1234. Give us an update on the Gabelman probe. You know, Assembly Speaker Voss saying former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gabelman may submit his final report on the 2020 election, perhaps this week. What do you know there?
Voss had said pretty recently that he expected the report by the end of the month. So that's today.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there is a meeting of the Assembly Elections Committee scheduled for tomorrow, and Mike Gabelman is one of two invited speakers at that event. So then they're talking about the Gabelman report. So I would expect that that is coming soon. I don't know, you know, exactly what it's going to entail, and I don't think it's going to be the end of us talking about Mike Gabelman. Because some of the stuff that he's doing has led to a lawsuit either filed by him or, you know, filed by a Democratic watchdog group. American Oversight has filed a lot of lawsuits challenging these Gabelman subpoenas. So while the report might be out, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily the end of the story. I think the other thing that's kind of interesting is that this investigation from Gabelman was, in theory, was to help Republicans draft legislation.
Craft legislation, right.
And that's like likely not going to happen because the Assembly likely had its final session day of 2022 last week. Mm-hmm. So the report may say a lot of things, but it won't be that. It won't be a template for bills this session. But yeah, there's, for example, there's a case where Gabelman has proposed jailing Wisconsin mayors if they don't comply with his subpoenas. There's not a hearing scheduled in that case until late April. So this could drag on a bit.
How long might he be on payroll in Wisconsin, or what are the costs here to this investigation?
That is another kind of outstanding question. As far as we know, the investigation was budgeted to go up to $676,000. And we don't know what their final costs are at this point, or if they, you know, we don't know that they're going over that number, but that was the number that we've been given so far.
Talking with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, taking us around the Capitol into politics and taking your questions. Have you been following the absentee drop box challenges? What should be the ultimate fate of ballot drop boxes in Wisconsin? What about breaking up Milwaukee public schools? Still time to talk legislation, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Sean Johnson here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing Wisconsin politics with WPR's own Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief. He's been covering the State Capitol for WPR since 2004. And Sean is with us for about nine more minutes. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is joining us from Delafield. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking me a call. My first comment is I think the rhetoric from former President Trump is unfortunate in terms of stolen election and so on and so forth. It belittles, I think, and oversimplifies a larger consideration, and that's that there's a large number of people that don't like the way the 2020 election was conducted, and it doesn't mean it was stolen. It doesn't mean that the result is illegitimate, but there's a large number of people that just don't like the way rules were changed at the last minute, and they never agreed on what the rules of that election were to be. And our country depends on people trusting the result of an election, and that's why some of these reforms are so critically important. And, you know, it's unfortunate if they do cause some inconvenience for voting and maybe make voting as perceived less or more difficult. But that decision, your decision, is so critical. Mm-hmm. And if it's that important to you, a little bit of inconvenience to protect the process should not be a big deal. And if we can't protect that process, we're not going to survive as a country. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you. Sean, you know, Jeff saying there, election integrity above all.
Yeah, I think the bills that Republicans tend to focus in on are the ones where the Wisconsin Elections Commission, you know, which was created by this legislature about 7 years ago now, less than 7 years ago, voted to give guidance to clerks that the, you know, the audit bureau, the Legislative Audit Bureau, later came back and said, you know, that should have been run by the legislature first. You know, that should have been, that's the kind of thing that should have been promulgated as a rule. When you promulgate a rule, it gives the legislature a chance to block it. And because the Elections Commission didn't do that, they just, they voted, they took bipartisan votes to do this stuff. I think those are the issues where you hear Republicans saying we shouldn't have that again. And if you didn't have the president constantly asserting falsely that the election was stolen, changes like these might not get as much attention, but they get lumped in with everything else because you can't put on blinders when you look at this stuff, right? You have to kind of consider it as a whole, but some of these changes in another universe might be considered more mundane.
So meanwhile, the state high court, the Supreme Court, is ruling on absentee ballot drop boxes that they won't be allowed for April 5th elections. Can you explain what is going on with the high court?
What happened there is that the drop boxes were challenged by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, a conservative law firm. They won in Waukesha County Circuit Court. That is, a Waukesha County judge said, I agree with you. Drop boxes don't appear in Wisconsin statutes. Therefore, they're not lawful, and ordered them to be immediately ended, basically, until told the Elections Commission, take back your guidance on drop boxes. They do not appear in the law. This was appealed. The Supreme Court said, you know, we can't make a change like this so close to the February election, because the Waukesha County ruling was handed down really close to the February primary. So they remain an option there. But then the court turned around a little bit later and said, there is enough time to make this change ahead of the April election while the case is being appealed. So the court is saying technically the Waukesha County ruling can stand while this appeal proceeds. That's not saying that the court will eventually agree with the Waukesha County court, you know, drop boxes, and what happens to them in November is still a very much an open question, but we know that they will not be an option while the case is being appealed.
Also, you know, what remains a mystery is redistricting and the high court. Do you get any sense there that is going to have a ruling soon?
I think there will be a ruling soon, given kind of the what the court was asking of parties in that case in terms of timing. Gave every indication that the ruling would be coming soon. We're at the end of February here. I wouldn't be surprised if you see one in the next couple weeks. And that won't necessarily be the end of the line on that case, because there is also a federal lawsuit that is pending. And even if the state Supreme Court acts on this, Democrats or groups that align with Democrats that have challenged this case could turn around and tell a federal court, hey, we still have a map here that's in violation of the Federal Voting Rights Act, and we need you to take up our challenge. So there could be more, you know, legal action in this to come, but the state Supreme Court's decision is going to be pretty important in terms of setting the foundation of what that map is going to look like. And we already know that it's either going to be Republican or really, really Republican, basically, based on the options that are before the court, because they've said we're going to adopt a least changes approach to redistricting, basically keep as much of the 2011 map, which was drawn by Republicans, as we can. And so when you start from that benchmark, whatever they're going to end up with is going to be Republican. But there is sort of an open question on whether it's going to be like veto-proof level Republican in the final map.
We'll be watching there. Talking with Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for WPR, covering the state capitol for since 2004. You can join in 800-642-1234. I'm wondering if you can help us out because Legislative Fiscal Bureau Director Bob Lang, we're talking with him tomorrow, and he has been at his post for more than four decades on work in the state legislature. Can you explain the Fiscal Bureau and the work it's done under his leadership?
Yeah, I mean, the Fiscal Bureau is... it is the brains of the operation in the state capitol, I guess. It's the legislature's nonpartisan budget office. So when a governor introduces a budget, or there's anything budget related, really, it goes to the Fiscal Bureau and they analyze it. They turn it into readable, understandable papers that lawmakers can learn from if they take the time. They basically make the information approachable for them so that they can make, you know, educated decisions. And they are really, as an agency, as nonpartisan as they come. And I think it's because of Director Lang's leadership, who is really, I think he was probably the most trusted person in state government. And, you know, really, I don't think I can't say enough great things about him. He even makes time for reporters to help us understand stuff too, despite his busy schedule. So just a really tremendous person to have in Wisconsin state government.
This is also the bureau that tells us that we are sitting on a $3.8 billion budget surplus and crunching the numbers there.
It is the most awaited memo in state government when Bob Lang puts out his revenue estimates every so often and predicts whether it's going to be good times or bad. He's the one that turns those out. Yeah. So when we hear about projected surpluses or deficits, it starts there.
What will happen to this surplus? I mean, Evers wants some of it to go back to residents. Where are we at with what in our last final moments? What happens to the surplus?
As far as we know, it's just going to sit there this election year. And you're going to hear the governor talk about that, say like, look, I want to send this money to you, but Republicans are standing in the way. If Governor Evers wins re-election, he will have a lot of money to build a budget around, assuming that the projections hold. He'll have a lot of money to build a budget around to call for the priorities he wants, and more than likely a Republican legislature to deal with again on getting a final product. If a Republican wins the governor's race, they could use this surplus to try big things. You know, there are some in the Republican Party that want to eliminate the state's income tax and offset that with an increase in the sales tax potentially. That would be a big policy move, and they would potentially rely on the surplus to do that.
Sean, thanks for joining us. Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief on the Ideas Network.